Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you following our first Monday Night Football, which is always interesting and exciting, especially with the return of Aaron Rodgers. We'll dig into that as the 49ers dominate. The Royals, well, we thought they had one in hand, and then the bullpen blows it. So we'll get into that. Speaking of the Royals, our Royals insider, Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kauffman, will join us. And we begin to look ahead, week two in the NFL. Of course, with the Kansas City Chiefs, feels like a while since they've played, right? Since last Thursday, last Thursday. They'll play the Bengals this weekend. We'll have Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, in as well in the next 2 hours. Jacob Albrecht here, Tommy Kester alongside me. Jad Chambers driving this ship. He's manning the IHOP hotline, which is always open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Still bringing you that all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th. We appreciate you being with us here on KFH on the Odyssey app. Maybe you're watching us on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, or on 12 News Connected. However it is that you take in the show, we appreciate it. And if you're listening from the future for free in a podcasted form on the Odyssey app, we appreciate you as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Tuesday. I was thinking about you yesterday. I know that you were out at the fair, so I was hopeful that you had a good day at the fair. You enjoyed some good fair food. You enjoyed shaking hands and kissing babies like a true politician. Yep. I hope you hope you enjoyed it.
I did, and I'll be back out there today, by the way. If you're out at the fair, stop by the 12 News booth and say hi. I did. I got my gyro, as us, country white folks would call it, a gyro. But I got that, and it was delicious as always. Those are my buddies over there that run that stand. And I'll get some corn probably today, and maybe something else. We'll see. But it is fun. I appreciate everybody that stops by and says they listen to the show. Some farmers and ranchers out there that are out in the mornings that listen to the show. We appreciate you guys that stopped in yesterday. My kid's bus driver's son, who has told him that he listens to the show every day. We appreciate it. It's always very humbling to know that we can help so many people pass the time in the day. I tell people that all the time. We're here to help pass the time in your day. One of the farmers out at the fair was telling me every morning, that's just, helps us. We're on the tractor. And I'm like, man, that's why I got into this. I was plowing fields on an old bunk tractor. And the only thing I could get was AM radio out in the country. And I would listen to sports talk radio every day, that and delivering flowers for my grandpa. Those are the reasons. I get it. So we're here for you. We appreciate it. You can also, get in touch with the program on those video streams. So we have this new feature on the Odyssey app. We've yet to have anybody take it. We've got a voice message feature on there that allows you to you push the little microphone if you go find the show, and you can leave a voice message, and that feeds to Jad. So if you're not able to wait live, if maybe you have a quick point, you can always try that. We're excited to see somebody give that thing a whirl. We haven't really tested it, but it's there. It is there for you as well. All right. Tommy, Monday Night Football, because we'll get to the Royals. Mike Gillespie will join us a little later this hour, so we'll get to the Royals in just a minute. But Monday Night Football was interesting. We knew it would be interesting. We at least got to see Aaron Rodgers play. I went so back and forth with this. On Thursday, I told our betting insider, PJ, I was like, this might be my favorite bet of the week, the Niners. This just seems like such a layup. And he was like, and he was a little cautious on it. And then by Friday, when our picks rolled around, I was like, you know what? That's a lot of points. Maybe it's a close game. The one thing I didn't count on in this game is the Jets' defense was not good at all. And I know San Francisco has a really, really good offense. But if the Jets' defense isn't what it was, I mean, that changes everything. It's more about that than it even is about Rodgers, right? If the Jets' defense isn't what it has been over the past few years, they're not doing anything this year. Rodgers didn't look great, but he didn't look bad. He certainly looked better than Zach Wilson has looked. But the Niners, as you would expect, kind of bottled up Brees Hall a little bit. They went all out on that. They have some great players. But man, the Jets defense really let them down. After about the first quarter and a half, the Niners were just moving the ball at will. That I did not expect in that game. But San Francisco, the biggest takeaway from the game, Tommy, is that San Francisco is very good. They did all of this without Christian McCaffrey, by the way. and a rookie undrafted free agent Jordan Mason leading the charge on the ground. Kyle Shanahan runs the ball better than any coach in football. The Niners are loaded. They're healthy for the most part. I know McCaffrey didn't play, but it, you know, he'll play at some point. They came into the season at some point. I don't know where it actually started with all their contract disputes. They were the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. Let's remember, not the Chiefs. And I think that they showed last night why that is. They are really stinking good.
Yeah, I think that you can point to the Sauce Gardner absence in the second quarter as part of the reason why the Jets defense didn't have an overall good game. After the game, he said that he had the wind knocked out of him, and that's why he was on the sideline for a good portion of that second quarter, and things kind of got away from the Jets defense at that point. Going back to Aaron Rodgers, I thought that there were flashes of vintage Aaron Rodgers. The drive that he put together early in the game, you know, he really leaned on Garrett Wilson on that drive. He had a good connection with Alan Lazard also, which isn't, you know, isn't surprising by any means. There were some good things and there were some bad things about Aaron Rodgers, and that was about, I think, what I expected to see from Rodgers. It's been such a long time since we've actually seen him, you know, out on the field. And I really believe that the positive plays that we saw from Rodgers, that's a result of just being a veteran and being savvy and knowing his way around the football field. There wasn't anything, at least from what I could tell, that was overly athletic from Aaron Rodgers, but there really hasn't been in the last few years, even when he was healthy. It was more, he just knows how to play quarterback at the NFL level, at a, you know, really high level. And so that's really, I think, what he fell back on in that game. And it worked for him at times, and it didn't work for him. He threw a pick. He didn't have a ton of yards. His completion percentage wasn't incredible, but he made it through the vast majority of the game. Obviously, the Jets pulled him, you know, there towards the end when it was kind of a blowout. But that was about what I expected to see from Aaron Rodgers. I didn't expect for the defense to have as many issues as it did. But that being said, I mean, I said it multiple times, I needed to see it to believe it from the Jets before I was willing to jump on the bandwagon. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't mean that they can't be a good team. It doesn't mean that they can't win some games. But they were outmatched by the 49ers. There's no doubt about it. And that's a Christian McCaffrey-less 49ers that right. They were outmatched by.
So the Jets, and you know, the Rodgers signing 2 years ago, I thought made all the sense in the world. Last year was obviously a disaster. We want the best for them for Breece Hall's sake. At least I do. I want to see how good Garrett Wilson really is, because I think he's a stud who's had one of the worst quarterback situations of all time, maybe. It was always a question of, can they be a real contender? And then we get Rodgers this year, and then he has the weird offseason, and there was that point in the offseason where I think we both were like, we're out, I'm out on the Jets. Like, it's not going to work as far as, because it is Super Bowl or bust. Don't mistake it. Like, the Jets are absolutely Super Bowl or bust. It's just like, I'm out. That was more about Rodgers' level of investment. That has all since simmered, and it's been a lot better. But I'm telling you, like, if their defense isn't like one of the best defenses in football, they're not going to do anything, no matter what Aaron Rodgers does. That was always a part of the equation. That was the part that surprised me last night. It wasn't that, I mean, they scored 19 points, and I know one of them was on a busted play, but that's Aaron Rodgers' MO to hit Alan Lazard over the top like that. It's just, when you see them score 19 points, Tommy, there's been a lot of, like, the last 3-4 years, if you could tell me the Jets were going to score 19 points, I'd tell you they'd win a lot of these games, right? Like, that's kind of what they do. And so, like, part of the equation's there. And San Francisco, by the way, has a really good defense. So it's 19 points on San Francisco. You're like, okay, now, like, that's going to play. It's the other half of it where it doesn't make any sense and you scratch your head a little bit. If their defense can't come out and shut down not only bad teams, but every team in football, they're not doing anything. Now, that doesn't mean they can't contend for the division. We saw Buffalo struggle. We saw Miami struggle. I think they can probably do that. But if their defense is not elite, and I mean like top 2-3 elite, they're not going to do anything this year. That was always a part of their Super Bowl equation. And we just didn't see that in the first game. So if you're the Chiefs and you're scouring around for who are the contenders this year, and we look back at week one now, at this point, the Jets aren't there. Now, it's 1 week, And maybe their defense bounces back and that was a bad game. And that could totally happen. And that would be fine. But as of now, the Jets aren't a contender with the Chiefs. The Bengals lose to the Patriots at home. We'll have to wait and see when they get all their weapons back. We've seen that story before with the Bengals. I'm still going to call them a contender. They have been terrible out of the gates forever. The Browns, no. The Bills, I'm not writing off the Bills yet. They did find a way to come back and win that game. I would tell you, though, the Dolphins, no. The Dolphins aren't contenders. The Texans absolutely are. Maybe the biggest statement of that group of teams, of course, the Ravens still are. They lost their game by a toenail. Then you go to the NFC. Certainly the Eagles would be. Jordan Loveless Packers. We better get Jordan Love back. You can cross them off the list. Lions found a way to win a game that they did, that was weird. I'm going to still consider them a contender. Niners obviously are a contender. And then you've got the Cowboys probably, which... I'm a jaded Cowboys fan that's not going to consider them a contender, but I think you'd be foolish not to at least can put them in that group right now. So it's a little bit of a shift. I would say the Dolphins are out for me. The Jets are out for me. And that's probably, and the Packers only because they don't have Jordan Love, I guess, at this point, but he should be back. So,
let me get this straight. The Dolphins are out for you and they won in week number one.
Yeah. Okay. That's a bigger picture. They're not going to go and win a bunch of games in cold weather in the postseason. That's it. And they weren't in there for me to begin the season. Like, I didn't consider the Dolphins a contender, but they certainly didn't do anything in the first week that makes me think I was wrong about that. I don't think they're a real contender. So I think you have the Chiefs and give the Ravens. I think you still have the Bills. I think you have the Eagles and the Niners. You probably, I'll reluctantly say the Cowboys, even though I don't really believe it.
You didn't mention the Texans.
I think the Texans made the biggest statement.
I think
the Texans absolutely are. And the Bengals still are because they've done this before. We've seen this out of them before.
I think after 1 week of the season, the NFC looks to be potentially a stronger conference as a whole than the AFC does. I mean, I think that the AFC is pretty top heavy. You've got the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Texans. Then I think you've got a gap, and it doesn't mean that the Bengals won't, you know, get it together. It doesn't mean that the Dolphins won't, you know, continue to be a strong team, or the Bills or whatever. But I think you've got a couple teams at the top of the AFC and then everybody else. There's a lot more parity from what I can tell, at least through 1 week of the season in the NFC. It's going to be of a jumbled mess there.
I will say this about the AFC. It doesn't look like there are any just god-awful teams. The Patriots may get there, but the Patriots also could be very well coached now with a new coach and be pesky this year. But that was the only one. Whereas we know the Giants are not going to be good at all. We know the Panthers are not going to be good at all. And, you know, I know the Saints, but we can make our way through on that a little bit. We're going to call this a mega overreaction Tuesday. We're looking way too much into week one. But I think when we look at the Chiefs and the chance at history and the three-peat, that ought to be always what we're doing, is kind of sizing up the field against them. The Niners make that statement last night. Niners are going to be tough. And the Chiefs beat them by a nose. You know, like, so that shouldn't surprise us, but they're back. Everybody's signed. They don't even have McCaffrey. And they just absolutely smashed a team that we expected to have one of the best defenses in football. We'll come back. We will continue the conversation here. We'll begin to set the table. Mike Gillespie coming up, bottom of the hour, to talk a little Royals. We'll set the table for that. We'll begin to scratch the surface on a couple of massive, massive games for KU and K-State this week. We've got Chiefs talk coming as well, with Dan Israel coming at the top of the hour. We'll stick with the NFL. Let's talk Chiefs-Bengals. What do we think about that game just at a bird's eye look? That's next on Sports Daily. Albrockton Caster. All of this football talk, by the way, is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits. Still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this. Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. We'll set you up with a text to win contest for some HDO. You can enter the contest by texting the keyword T to the short code 20357. That'll give you a chance to win a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from. and a free Free Reign coffee drink. All the great classics, iStore hot, including the all-new Apple Crisp Dirty Chai and the new Butter Pecan Mocha Latte. Those are available for you, iStore hot, as well as all the coffee drinks. You can get one of each, a tea, a coffee. Each participant can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, that's tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357 via text to win on that. Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH, staying up late with Monday Night Football. Tommy, how did your first week of fantasy football go?
It was up and down. I mean, you know, as you know, because you're in like 40,000 different leagues, it's hard to, you know, have a lot of success in all of them, because maybe you've got a player in one league that you're competing against in another league. So you got to kind of go back and forth on that. Overall, it was good. I think I'm in four or five leagues this year. And my favorite one to watch, which I didn't even think that it was going to be my favorite one, but it's the Guillotine League that you and I are in, with TJ Cleland from 12 News and a bunch of other people, because like there were 32 teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And it came down
a two quarterback league with 32
teams. And it can, you know, and if you're not familiar with the Guillotine League, the teams at the very bottom each week get cut from the league. They're done. And then all their players hit the free agent pool that everybody else can claim. And it came down to the final drive last night on who was going to get cut. And we'll have to give TJ some grief for this on Friday, because he was one of the teams that got cut. But, you know, like, I'm watching the game.
I thought he made it. That's
no,
hilarious.
He got
I didn't
cut.
Realize he got
he
cut.
Got cut by a point. And so, you know, and he's the one that put the league together. He's the commissioner of the league, and he's out in week number one. So I told him that, you know, the good thing about it is that he can now dedicate all his time to being the best commissioner that he can be.
That's right. That will be bittersweet to now have to deal with that for this many weeks as your team is eliminated. Yeah, it was I wasn't totally sad, but I didn't come out of those drafts very. I was so distracted. I haven't been like home for all my drafts and doing things in so long that I would finish them and be like, man, that team's not very good. But man, that was a fun draft, whatever. I'm too busy talking trash, if you can believe it, to really pay that much attention. But it was fine. Brees Hall's first touchdown bet was money last night, though. I'll tell you that. That one was very fruitful.
Your betting, by the way, I feel like, especially to start the season, has been, you know, pretty solid. You and I were texting last night. I haven't had a chance to really do much at all.
I didn't do well in college football on Saturday at all. I was way off, as we'll get to picks later this week, and everybody can see that. Way off. However, the NFL was pretty good. The NFL was pretty good to me. So overall, it was a pretty good week. And we'll get into some of those things. These first touchdowns, I hit a worthy first touchdown, hit Brees Hall first touchdown. There was a lot there. So that was all good too, but we're in the thick of it, and it is so hard. You've been having a crazy couple of weeks. I have to traveling every day this week. So it's hard to like lock in like normal. Like normally we're looking at this, and now there's like, there's waiver wires for fantasy, all these fantasy football players. Hey, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I don't have time for that.
It doesn't help that, you know, we've got our attention diverted from the NFL and college football to the Royals, you know, continuing in September. That hasn't happened in a long time.
So the Royals last night, I know, and this is, you know, we've got our eye on it, and listening to that on the drive back from the ferry yesterday, ready to switch over to Monday Night Football. Thanks to KFH and the Odyssey Network for bringing me all those chances to listen to all that, make my drive shorter. The Royals lose 10-4. I was worried about Brady Singer in the game. Singer was okay. He did all right. He certainly gave them a chance to win. They were winning when he left the game. And the wheels fell off on James MacArthur. So he allowed four runs. That's not good. You know, like Tommy, we sit here and we look at it. 10-4 losers in this. It doesn't worry me that much. You know, Salvador Perez heated up. Okay, so that check that box right now. Bobby Witt Jr. has not all the way heated back up. But all in all, it was James MacArthur's, you know, blunder that cost the Royals the game. So I'm not worried about the loss at all. But it was one they had a chance to win. That does make it sting just a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, really the common factor is that James MacArthur should not be in high-leverage situations ever again. Okay. And, you know, that's been the way it's been for the last few weeks. I think he had a brief spot where there was maybe a game or two where he came in and he was okay. But by and large, I mean, for gosh, what, the last couple of months, it's not been good for him.
To be fair to James McArthur, since August 5th, in 16 appearances since August 5th, before last night, he'd only given up one run through all of those appearances. He otherwise was clean. You know, he wasn't clean in the sense of, but he was even more clean, Tommy, than he had been. Now, he had given up some hits and done some of those things.
But how many of those situations were in a ball game like the one that they were facing?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure off the top of my head. In high leverage, you mean? Like, I don't know. But, I think the problem for me is with, and we'll get to Mike Gillespie on this too and get his take on it. James McArthur's stuff is sort of high leverage stuff. He's been in the role before. He was moderately successful, and he had had a stretch of games there over a month, almost a month and a week. So what is that, 5-6 weeks where he had been very effective. So, I mean, I get it. When Singer has to leave the game in the fifth inning, somebody has to pitch, you know, like it's got to go to somebody. And so then I look at it as like, okay, do I trust Stratton more than McArthur? I do not. I trust McArthur far more. Now, Stratton was clean last night, but, you know, way down at that point. So it's unfortunate because I do think McArthur's going to have to be one of the guys that they lean on, because who else is there? You have Ursig right now. I mean, I think Bubic at some point is still fine. I don't know what Harvey's status is. Sam Long, I guess. Like, none of those guys have been, you know, out with the exception of Ursig, have been significantly better than McArthur. So it was a bad outing. I think what we really have to watch now is what does he do in his next one, right? Because the problem for him this year has been it like gets bad and then the wheels sort of fall off a little bit for a while. Is this a blip on the radar, or is this the beginning of another one of those stretches? And I think, yeah, there's only one way to find that out, and that's, you know, the next opportunity. You got to give him the ball. I do think they have to give him the ball. I know you don't want to see him pitch again. The problem is, what's the replacement there? That's the issue that I see for the team. I just don't know that they have anybody else they can go to like that.
I do think that that's a challenge. I mean, it absolutely is, and they just don't have. I think really at the end of the day, it just comes down to reliability. Who do you trust? They don't even necessarily need to have lights out stuff. I mean, remember Lucas Ursig when he was first traded, he came in and he was lights out, and that was incredible. And watching the way that the energy that he brought to the bullpen was great. I'm not even asking for that from other relievers. I just want a little bit of reliability, somebody that you can throw out there and you have a good idea that it may not be the best thing in the world, but at least you're not looking at a potential blow up in your faces as well. And, you know, and that there's been far too much of that. I mean, McArthur doesn't even log an out and he gives up 4 earned runs, right? Like doesn't even log an out.
Right.
So that
when he's bad, he's very bad.
And that's the way that it's been with a lot of these Royals relievers. When they're bad, they are extremely bad. It's not just, you know, like they were mediocre. No, it's either like they're lights out in the case of Ursig, or they are god awful.
So when we look at their wins recently, like on that streak, it would appear, and McArthur had been a part of that, and so had Long. Schreiber, we forget, and we'll get to Mike Gillespie on this in just a second. I'm just looking at it because this is maybe a pressing thing to sort through. Starter to Bubic to Ursig is, I would imagine, the favored formula, but that's not going to happen every time. And especially with, you know, in a Marsh start or a Singer start, these kinds of things. So toy with that as we go to break here, and we'll bring in Mike Gillespie to get his take on it. There is a hole there still. And you know, what are the Royals going to do here? Because the good news is we're focused on that again, instead of like, oh my God, the wheels are falling off. Are they even going to make it? I think we can reshift focus back to what's the best version of this team as the postseason gets here. So we'll talk to Mike Gillespie, that Kings of Kauffman. That's coming up next. You can get us your comments on our video streams. If you've got any questions for Mike, Facebook, YouTube, X, we can get those to him. Let us know. Royals, they'll be right back in action tonight, and you'll hear them right here on KFH, 6 o'clock. Mike Gillespie, more Royals talk when we come back on Sports Daily. right, welcome back in, everybody. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Good place to go watch the Royals if you're looking for a spot as they continue the postseason chase. Tom and I both out there. We appreciate their sponsorship of the program. We enjoy being out there. Great golf season right now. As we bring in Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, back to join us, our Royals insider. Love having Mike be a part of things with us here on Sports Daily as we come down the home stretch. So we proposed this, Mike, right before. Give the listeners a chance to ponder it. What is the formula for the Royals? We know they like to go starter Bubich, Urcic. But in the games they can't go starter Bubich, Urcic, what is the best case scenario? MacArthur had been clean. Obviously, the wheels fell off last night. But what are you seeing out of the bullpen, and how would you like to see it stack up? Because this stuff matters as we think about the postseason.
Well, I don't know if there is a, quote, best, unquote, scenario. This is something that's been going on all season long. I was listening to you gentlemen before the break, and you know, I think you size up MacArthur pretty well. He's just so inconsistent. He has a string of good games, and then he comes in last night and pin the loss on MacArthur. There's no question about that. I don't know what it is with MacArthur. He, like you say, he's got great stuff when he's got it. When he doesn't, it can be disastrous. I don't think you can count Daniel Lynch out of this equation. Of course, the trouble with Lynch is, if you're going to face a lot of right-handed lineups, you got Lynch, who's a left-hander. But, regardless and notwithstanding that lefty-righty issue, it may be time for Quatrero to say, Hernandez doesn't always get it done. MacArthur is so unreliable and unpredictable. Maybe we try Lynch a little bit more than we are. I wrote yesterday maybe he would give Lynch some high leverage situations because Urcic can't pitch every day. But, I think the bottom line at this point is nothing's going to change. There isn't somebody out there they're going to get. I mean, Cleveland put Scott Barlow. They designated him for assignment over the weekend. Barlow's not the answer. He had a disastrous August. If Barlow was the answer, he probably would still be in Kansas right. City, but he's not.
Is Harvey coming back? Like what? Because that's the guy I keep looking at. Is maybe they get Hunter Harvey back and he's actually healthy this time?
They're being pretty quiet about Hunter Harvey. They seemed optimistic when they put him on the injured list that he wouldn't be there very long. But, we don't hear much about him. I fear to an extent that maybe we're not going to see him back this year. When the Royals have negative injury news and they're uncertain, they don't say much about it at all. They're not all that open about those things. So I've kind of crossed Harvey off my list for the rest of the season just because of that. Now, watch them, activate him today, but that's kind of the way I look at that at this point.
Mike, one of the things that I feel like is a negative byproduct of what the Royals are facing with the bullpen is that the temptation becomes, and we've seen this happen from time to time, the temptation for Matt Quatrero becomes to lean even heavier on the starters, have them pitch as many innings as possible. And eventually you get to a point where you're dealing with fatigue and, injury risk and that sort of thing. Michael Lorenzen obviously has been injured. And, I specifically can remember the situation with Michael Wacha. I think again, the Cleveland series where Quatrero sent him out for the seventh inning and he looked clearly tired. And that ultimately cost them, I think, the finale of that Cleveland series. I think it just really comes down to the lack of trust in the majority of that bullpen. As we're getting to the final couple of weeks of the regular season and into the playoffs, I mean, I would assume I haven't been in Mac Quatrero's shoes, but I would imagine that temptation to hang on to your starters for as long as possible just gets larger and larger and larger.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, it's pretty clear, even though he liked his starters going deeper than usual, even, you know, early in the season, it's pretty clear now that they've got some pretty long leashes simply because the bullpen, the relievers have such short leashes. So I'm going to look for that to continue. I don't think he has a lot of choice. I'm really interested to see how Lugo goes against the Yankees tonight. He's pitched so many innings beyond what he's ever pitched before. And they can't afford to have Seth Lugo. They can't afford to have Waka go down with an injury. But, you know, every time it gets about the sixth inning with those guys, I really start to get nervous.
And yeah, and you don't have any, but I'll float an idea to you, Mike. As we think about the postseason, I think that's fair to do. Lorenzen has been a utility knife over the course of his career. When he comes back, you don't need five starters in the postseason. What if he's the answer in the pen when he gets back? As we get to that part, what if they deploy him that way as the bridge to Bubich and Urcic?
I think that's a pretty interesting idea. You're right. He's swung back and forth throughout his career. He's done reasonably well both in the rotation and out of the pen. Coming back off of a hamstring injury, it could very well be when he does get reactivated that they work him out of the pen a little bit. And you know, he's been around. He's been in the playoffs. So, you know, I think if I'm J.J. Pecola and Matt Quatrero, I think pretty seriously about putting him out there. And you make a really good point. He doesn't need to be in the rotation come the playoffs because you're right, you don't need a five-man rotation there.
You know, Mike, I do think that one of the positives that has come out of the last few days or so when things were so bad for Kansas City a week ago when you were on this show talking with Paul Savage and I, that has kind of turned around is that it looks like, you know, by and large, the offense has improved. I don't want to say that they're all the way back because I think Bobby Witt Jr. is still struggling a bit, but Salvador Perez had a great game last night, despite the loss, the four-game winning streak. While the offense didn't break loose necessarily, they did what they needed to do to get those victories against the Twins over the weekend. When you look at the lineup and the way it stacks up now, you know, last night is a perfect example, even in the loss. Tommy Pham leads off. Robbie Grossman is the DH. Yuli Gurriel is the first baseman. They've got Hunter Renfroe back. It seems like, by and large, they basically have their full complement of hitters in that lineup on the bench. And so that's got to be something, especially with the struggles that we've just documented, that they lean on down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's good to have all those guys back with a couple of weeks left. I looked at the numbers earlier today. Witt is, you know, since late August, he's like 11 for 51 or 11 for 55. It figures out to 215, and he's driven in four runs. He can't stay there and expect the Royals to have a lot of success. I don't think his slump will last all that much longer. You know, there's some good signs, but one of the interesting things about Witt is if he only gets on base once,
yeah,
he can make so many things happen. You know, that bloop last night and he by Perez and he scores all the way from first. I mean, He's only been around 3 years, but that's already vintage Bobby Witt. So he can be pretty disruptive, but he needs to hit. He, you know, we all know that.
Mike, and we'll follow you here at Mike Gillespie, JD on social media. Kings of Kauffman, of course, Mike's work is available there. You can follow them. We talk about the lineup. I still wonder, Vinny Pasquantino, and I know the Royals, and you've mentioned this before, the injuries are tough. What are the chances if you had to give a 50-50 as the baseline? You think it's better than 50% or worse than 50% chance he could play games in the postseason?
I think it's from what all I've heard about that injury, the fact that he's had that surgery. I think, you know, if you assumed, and I don't think this is a very good assumption to make, but if you assumed that this team could get to the series, that they make that deep a run, I think it's better than 50-50. On the other hand, I don't think he'll be ready. I'd be surprised if he's ready for a wild card series. I mean, I just really would be surprised. Maybe if you get into the division series, he can make an appearance. With him, you know, it's all going to be what can he do with the bat, if he can do anything. Because he can always DH.
Right. So, Mike, and then I would ask you one more here as we look to the rest of this series and beyond. Are we comfortable now with the win streak and the padding that they were able to put in the wild card? I think they probably are comfortable at this point, at least for a wild card. But how much, you know, pressure? We saw the 7-game lose streak. We know they're streaky. Are we in a good place? I know the analytics places have them over 90% and everything. Can Royals fans breathe easy yet, or are we not quite there?
I think Royals fans can breathe a lot easier than they could a week ago. You know, when we chatted last week, I said the Royals aren't going to win the division, and I'm still convinced they're not going to win the division. But, you know, they've got a nice little lead for the second wild card. And, you know, that the second and third wild cards right now are really between the Royals and the Twins. You know, the Red Sox and Detroit are much further back than that, although Detroit is, you know, decided to play now. Yeah, but I think Royals fans can breathe a lot easier. We'll know an awful lot after this series and after they get done with Pittsburgh over the weekend. But I'm already figuring them for the wild card, one of the wild cards.
I am too. It'll be fun, and we'll continue to dissect the bullpen and overanalyze everything. Mike, you can find Mike's work at Kings of Kauffman, kingsofkauffman.com, at Kings of Kauffman on social media. Give Mike a follow there as well. Mike, we appreciate it. And we'll enjoy these last couple of weeks here before hopefully a postseason berth.
Definitely. Looking forward to it.
There goes Mike Gillespie. Always appreciate the visits. If you joined us late, if you missed any of that interview, you can always, of course, go back and check it out on the Odyssey app. Jad puts those out in podcasted form. You can go right there. You can catch the show from past dates if you miss anything. I think it's interesting, Tommy, on the bullpen. Harvey, it doesn't sound like Mike has a good feeling will be back and at least relevant. I love the idea of Lorenzen to the pen. Two reasons. You don't need five starters in the postseason. Marsh is showing them he can get them through this home stretch. Let Lorenzen's done this before. I mean, I knowing nothing else, who would you trust outside of Bubic and Ursig more than Lorenzen in the pen right now if he was to pitch there, right? He's a grinder. The chances of him coming in for a total egg like we get so often from some of these bullpen guys is significantly lower than what they currently put out there.
That's what I thought that they were bringing Michael Lorenzen in to do initially. Right. When they first traded for him, I thought, well, they may have been.
Yeah. Give Alec Marsh a break. I mean, they could have been.
At that time, I'm like, well, they've got five capable starters at minimum. You know, and I felt like even at the time, Alec Marsh was capable. He was inconsistent, but he was capable of getting it done. He had been at times throughout the season. So I felt like, okay, well, they're going to bring in a veteran guy that can bounce back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen. But I felt like he would probably be the bullpen, like a bullpen guy. And maybe a spot starter when necessary. And that's not really the way that they've utilized him thus far. I mean, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you follow Lorenzen's former team, the Rangers. Like a couple of days before he was traded to the Royals, didn't he pitch like 4 innings in relief for the Rangers?
Out of a necessity, yeah. He had to like, he and Ursa, I
mean, he's a grinder in that way.
Personalities. Well, they just were like, we're screwed. Can you come in and help? And he was, and he like with no notice, yeah. On like no rest.
And it was like 4 yeah, sure, whatever. Innings or something. And he did a good job doing it. And so I do think that when he gets back healthy and gets back with the team, I mean, they need some reinforcements where they get it. That's where they need to have it. I think
it's the play. Yeah, and then it also allows you to free up, like if you want Lynch to be a situational guy and you don't need a long, because in the postseason, again, your bridge is pretty much your bridge every night. Like it doesn't change much in a series, ideally. Like your formula doesn't change too much. But we'll watch that. We'll watch his health and hopefully the Royals can, I mean, who knows? Maybe they stay in contention here in the AL Central and they can string it together. That's certainly still on the table. Certainly an exciting aspect of this season to watch down the stretch. As is, they're, after this series, finally going to get a little schedule relief. Maybe they can string together a ton of wins and do something really special down the home stretch here. We'll have it all. All right, coming up as we start our next hour, Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, will begin to look ahead to the Bengals. That is coming your way when we return. It's all Brockton Caster. It's Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Glad to be with you today here on Sports Daily. Hey, the Shockers are taking over the fairgrounds. I'll be out there later today. The Shockers will be out there for Shocker Sunday at the Kansas State Fair on September 15th. Make it out to Hutchinson for a Shocker-filled day at the fair. Tune in at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. So for an hour on 97.5, 1240 right here on KFH, an on-site live show featuring special Wichita State guests. So we're excited about that. Tune into that 11 to noon on Sunday. I'll tell you, the fair, Tommy, I'd heard from some of my colleagues that this weekend was as busy as they've ever seen it. And then yesterday was Dollar Day, so it was packed. I asked my guy over at the gyro stand, gyro stand, if he, like what he thought. And he said it has been a fantastic fair. That's awesome. I'm happy for the state fair folks. I don't think it's going to rain. I just, you know, everyone wants the rain, and usually the fair brings some rain, but it didn't bring the rain. So, it's the fair. You fair. What's your favorite fair food?
I'm always a Pronto Pup person. I've been a Pronto Pup guy my entire life. That's like the fair, like the vintage fair quintessential food. So give me that over anything else. Maybe like a hand squeezed lemonade or something like that to go alongside a Pronto Pup. I'm pretty simple. I don't need to go crazy or wild with anything else. I'll tell you, part of the reason, as a guy that has grown up here and been around this area my entire life, the Kansas State Fair brings one of two things typically: either 110 degree weather or it pours nonstop. And right. So the fact that you've got beautiful weather, like over the weekend was gorgeous for the opening weekend, it's going to be really nice all week long. It's going to be warmer, but it's not going to be brutally hot. I can definitely understand why it's been, you know, pretty well attended so far.
Yeah, look, the weather helps. Dollar Days helped. I'll be curious to see how it is out there today. We always appreciate everybody stopping by and saying hello. So do that. Jake Ballbrock, Tommy Caster here. It is Sports Daily. We'll have Dan Israel in just a second. We're getting a little bit of a connection issue. Tommy, Chiefs, Bengals, initial thoughts, and we'll get into this with Dan. When you hear that, when you see a 6-point spread, what's your gut say on that?
I'm going to lay the points. I mean, right away, I don't think that there's any question with that because of what we saw from both teams in week number one. It just, to me, and I know that there's going to be more analysis as the week goes on, but to me, at least right now, that seems like a pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, I would be inclined to do the same. Now, if this was week 13, I might feel a little different about that. Let's bring in Dan Israel. Oh, we just lost Dan again on his video. Well, Jad, why don't we just give Dan a call and we'll just do it that way.
Dan is there. We don't necessarily have to. There he is. He's back. We got him.
Okay. All right, Dan. Let's see if this works. Dan, I know we're having a little bit of a connection issue. We'll see how this goes.
Can you hear me actually?
We got you. So Dan Israel, executive producer of Chiefs Radio Network, our Chiefs insider for a lot of years now. We always appreciate Dan's insight. The Bengals laid an egg. The Bengals lay a lot of eggs early in seasons, even when they're really good. I surmise that's probably about where we're at. I don't know if T. Higgins is bouncing back from a hamstring injury. 6 points at home. That seems pretty appealing. You know, again, like this was week 13, maybe a little bit different, but in week two here, that feels pretty good. I mean, this, if you're going to get the Bengals, this is when you want to get the Bengals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Watching them Sunday, they looked really anemic. And I think, you know, you can only put so much on one guy, and it just, they just didn't have what it took, you know? And I do think their offense is somewhat like ours, where there's a complexity to it. And as you mentioned, the earlier you are in the season, the worse it is for them. They're just not refined yet. They'll probably be there in the end. We'll probably see them in the playoffs. But I do think, you know, right now, the way they looked Sunday, it's not much to scare you when you look at the Chiefs and what they were able to accomplish against the Ravens.
Dan, I think predictably with Kansas City on that opener, you know, some of the biggest issues that the Chiefs had defensively, containing Lamar Jackson and on the ground. And that's what Jackson does. That's what he does against every team. But it definitely seemed like, you know, that was the issue. I think, you know, going into the game, everybody had kind of pinpointed that and it kind of came to fruition there. Knowing that, you know, they're playing the Bengals this week, Joe Burrow is not as mobile as Lamar Jackson is. They're not going to put, you know, Burrow in that kind of position, especially with, you know, the injury history that Joe Burrow has had. So at least in that regard, defensively for Kansas City, it looks like this should be at least a better matchup as far as the way that the Chiefs defense likes to play.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, and I, after the game, I go down in the locker room. My first duty is to go in and talk with Coach Reed. And so he meets with Clark Hunt and Brett Veach and everybody immediately. Then he meets with me. While they were meeting, I was sitting outside his office door in the hallway just waiting. And Steve Spagnuolo walked by me and he comes straight up to me, puts his hands on my shoulders and says, "I sometimes don't think we're ever going to get that guy stopped." And I thought, "Yeah, Coach, that's just the way that guy is." And frankly, I thought we saw even a little bit in Lamar Jackson, the same thing we saw in the AFC Championship last year, which is when they put it on his shoulders, he's not able to do it. And, you know, I don't know why you'd be third and goal or, you know, 3 yards from the goal line and not give it to Derrick Henry, but whatever, that the Chiefs, I thought, did a great job. And I thought Leo Chanel did an outstanding job for his first effort in spying somebody. Got a little involved in traffic. You know, he needs to stay out of traffic, not let people get his hands on him. But I thought he did a great job with Lamar Jackson. But to your point, Tommy, none of that is going to exist against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
Now, I do think they can run the football. They certainly – Burrow can throw. But the receiver situation there with – you know, how much is Chase going to be ready this week? And it's just been a mess. T. Higgins, as you mentioned, is I mean, that's not an easy recovery, right? That's not – when you're a guy that's supposed to run fast down the field, a hamstring really hamstrings you. And so I think it's going to be one of those situations where I just don't know how they come into Kansas City full power. And Arrowhead's not an easy place to play. That's just all there is to it.
I think – there's so much to gather up on this. So as it pertains to the Bengals too, like Jamar Chase didn't practice all offseason. They don't have T. Higgins. They don't have Joe Mixon anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Like there are so many things with the Bengals that they're going to have to get sorted out. That's what I mean. Getting them now feels like a win already for the Chiefs. Not that I think, well, I do think they're going to win the game, but you know, the Bengals are going to be very different 5-6 weeks from now. And they always start slow anyway. I don't know why that is, but they do. And the Burrowhead thing sits there for the Chiefs. This is a motivation game for the Chiefs. It's a motivation game for Chiefs fans. when we look at the Ravens, it just is such a different offense, right? Lamar Jackson gives you trouble. Joe Burrow's not going to give you trouble in that way. I thought as far as the defense goes, which was a concern, not a concern, but a question, I guess, for the Chiefs going in, that's as good as I would have expected them to look. Bend don't break, a little old school there. It'll be a totally different type of test with Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. But how would you grade that first, new defense in a lot of ways, defense for the Chiefs?
Yeah, Jacob, I think one of the things for the Chiefs defense that had us concerned was they hadn't been able to play together in camp. Reed didn't play at all. You had Nick who was injured. You had Chris who was in and out. And so for a lot of that, you never had all three levels practice together and go through preseason together. And this was kind of their first time together. And so I thought you saw the same thing for the Ravens offensive line. They kept just bonehead penalty after bonehead penalty because they hadn't played together. So I think for the Chiefs defense, that first outing just to get the reps was really, really important. And I know it was by what, a quarter of an inch or a toenail, however you want to say it, but they got the stop at the end of the game when they needed it. And so I feel like surviving week one was a good goal for the Chiefs defense. Now we got to kind of see it come together. Nick Bolton's got to play better. I mean, that's just all there is to it. Without Willie Gay there, he's got a lot more cover to do. And so I think you'll see this kind of new defense. Spagnuolo's so creative. We know we're going to see Drew Tranquil in coverage. We're going to see Justin Reed dropping down and blitzing. And this is just the way Spagnuolo works. But all of that's got to be refined over the coverage. You got to have coverage first. You've got to be able to contain. And I thought they did a pretty good job against the really tough Ravens. I mean, Derrick Henry really wasn't that effective. So I guess to somebody, and I will say too, Chris Jones was absolutely gassed. I mean,
why Dan, are they putting him on the end? Can we not do that again? Can we not put him on the edge again? That was my biggest complaint about the opener was that they had Jones lined up wide. Yeah. Is that an indictment on the opposite of George Karloftis? Are we going to see that? Because it didn't work the first time. I don't think that we did it. Chris Jones is a Chris Jones weapon in the middle.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
I think they're trying to take advantage of matchups. I think they think they can get Chris Jones on a tackle sometimes where he might not be able to get through the guard center, the A gap. And so I think they're moving him around just for creativity. I don't think it's an indictment on George, but I do think it's hampering George. He's not in the same technique every time. He's not in the same position. So he's kind of learning multiple skill sets all at the same time. And, and George is, look, he's not a rookie, right? I mean, at this point, he should be past a lot of that stuff. But I didn't think he necessarily had his greatest game on Thursday. I think with Amenahu not being – I mean, that all of these things kind of factor in there. They got to get Cam in there. They got to get – there's just a lot they've got to do. And so I think they're moving Chris around to kind of just, maybe experiment with different formations and give Chris an advantage here and there. But I think sometimes it's to the detriment of the other guys, because therefore when Chris goes to the edge has to come in, right? Now you got George Karloftis, and I love George, but he's not a huge guy, right? I mean, he's my height I guess he's bigger. He's a little taller than me, but I feel like that's not necessarily the best place for George. So I think sometimes it's to the detriment of the other guys, but man, I also throw in here, who am I to question Steve Spagnuolo?
I get it.
You mentioned Nick Bolton and his performance on Thursday night, and I agree with you. I think that, that's got to be a priority moving forward is figuring out for Steve Spagnuolo how to put Bolton in the best position to have success. There were some plays he was running all over the field. And I know that, early on, one of the first drives for the Ravens, they march down the field, they score. And the only thing that kept coming to mind was, man, the Chiefs miss Willie Gay Jr. That was the first thing I thought about. And as the game went on, I think the defense, especially at the linebacker position, settled down a little bit. I will say, from a positive perspective, I was really impressed with Leo Chenal. And I know that Chenal has had flashes. He had flashes last season and things like that. But he's got a motor on him. And, you know, he was all over the place, I felt like. So at least for me, even though Bolton struggled some, I thought Leo Chenal more than made up for it defensively.
Yeah, I was, I don't want to say shocked, because I've seen flashes out of Chenal. But that's the most consistent starter-like performance I've seen him do. And it's probably the most reps he's gotten in a long time, too. But I feel like, you know, they've got to kind of – Nick can't go sideline to sideline like Derek Johnson. He's not built like that. He's a – you know, he's a big, muscular guy. I think Drew Tranquil's more that guy. You know, he's a little slimmer, a little faster. But they've got to figure that out. And it's funny you mentioned that, because now I realize at the end of the game, we let a tight end go wide open, and that was on our cornerback, right? And I get that. So yes, we miss Snead. But I think in a lot of ways, you're absolutely right. I almost think the bigger loss was Willie Gay Jr. And, you know, when you're talking about a guy, a linebacker, you're talking about a guy who's responsible for both the run and the pass, as opposed to Snead really was a pass guy, right? So I do think that the loss of Willie Gay is going to be something they have to overcome, and they're going to have to do it with scheme too, because those guys don't grow on trees. That talent isn't just there for the picking, but it sure was refreshing to see Chenal step up and go, well, you know, maybe we've got more depth there than we thought.
We'll get to the offense in a second. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. So it was interesting that the receivers for Baltimore didn't do a ton of damage, but Isaiah Likely did a ton of damage. The Bengals are going to be such a different offense to see the defense defend. I don't even know how much we take away from it. The Bengals don't have a great tight end. They, in theory, have some really good wide receivers. They don't have a running quarterback. Like, it's just a very different type of test, I think. But when the Chiefs play teams with good tight ends, do you think Likely was a one-off, or do you think this, again, is something that could hurt them down the stretch, the ability to cover a good tight end?
Well, I want to think Likely was a one-off, but I think, you know, this is the test, right? I mean, if we go into week 3 and 4 and this is a repeating kind of issue, they've got to figure it out. And you know, he was so open on that near side end zone. I mean, 7 yards, you can't give even a tight end 7 yards in the NFL. That's too open. And so I want to think there was just some blown coverages, and it's just maybe us not coming up to speed as quick, the defense not coming up to speed as quick. But we'll see this week, because I feel like, you know, if you're going to have, again, if the Bengals were maybe the toughest game we're going to play all year, and let's say that was a – on a scale of 0 to 10, that was a 7 or an 8 threat. The Bengals, having watched them with my own eyes on Sunday, the Bengals look like a 3, 4, 5 now. I mean, I just don't think it's going to be that hard. So I hope, and look, I will say this. I think the Bengals will fight all 60 minutes. I think it'll be a game all the way to the end. And if the Chiefs make mistakes, the Bengals will capitalize on them. But if the Chiefs play well, I think it's an opportunity for the defense to kind of get their feet under them and kind of come together and figure out the things that maybe they didn't do as well as they should have in the Ravens game.
We've gone this far, Dan, and not really talked about Xavier Worthy and the debut that he had in a Chiefs uniform. I mean, it was just phenomenal from him offensively. And, you know, it's hard to not think about the fact that they were able to get him to take the top off of defenses without Hollywood Brown playing either. And so it's one of those things where, man, you would think as soon as they can get Brown back, you know, Mahomes should have a lot of fun with both of those receivers on top of everybody else they have, like Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce.
Yeah, it was so fun to watch. I just, you know, this kid's the real deal. And, you know, there's that old saying, if he's even, he's leaving, kind of in the NFL. And man, we saw that. If the guy has 2 feet on you, you're toast. 2 feet. I mean, if he's an arm length away from you, you are not catching him. And it's fun to see. And it's that kind of Tyreek Hill speed that we were missing. And I love his attitude, man. He is one of those guys that just sits in the, you know, he's quiet. He studies. He prepares, he works. And if this rookie is anything like what we saw in week one, man, is it going to be a fun season? And to your point, it isn't just Worthy. It isn't just Worthy, but he was absolutely fun to watch on Thursday, no doubt.
So the Chiefs put up 27 points. I joked about this on social media. I just said that, you know, all this without Hollywood Brown, good luck. But they put up 27 points on a defense we know at the end of the year will be a top 10 defense. They always are.
Yep.
Travis Kelce touched the ball only three times. Worthy, who was great, only touched the ball three times. So those, all of that factors in. They still scored 27 points. Hollywood Brown touched the ball zero times.
Yeah.
So you had six combined touches between Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Travis Kelce, and they put up 27 points on the Ravens. That I've said it all off season. This feels like another, you know, 4,000 yard or 5,000 yard, 40 touchdown kind of year for Mahomes. When they're healthy, if they ever get healthy at the same time, I don't know how teams are going to slow them down. I just don't. Like, and that's not being a homer. That's being realistic. Like, yeah. I don't know how teams are going to defend them if they're ever fully healthy together.
Yeah, I you know, when we talk about the offense is back, baby, man, it really is. And I feel like we get better offensively as we go through the year as well. And so, you know, to see these flashes in week one that are, I mean, 27 points against a tough defense. The one thing they were right from the Ravens defense right from the gate is physical. And I was so impressed with the Chiefs came out and they were fast. And maybe, if not as physical, maybe a little more physical than the Ravens. And that surprised me because that is not what we typically do. We have to come out and kind of come up to speed. You know, the first quarter, we look like we're almost in slow motion sometimes. And so I was really impressed with the physicality that they were playing and offensively. And when you look at Worthy, well, first of all, if I'm a Buffalo fan, I would want a grand jury indictment about how these things keep happening. They have to be saying, how did we trade this pick? How did they get this kid? I mean, why? I said on draft night, if I were a member of the Buffalo Bills organization, I would say, if the call ID starts with an 816 or a 913, don't answer it. You know, just don't pick up the phone. But I think, you know, getting Worthy in there and seeing him do so much with three touches, I'm not even sure we've seen that. I mean, I guess we saw moments of that, like with Tyreek, but it's just phenomenal to watch. And again, it's the start of it. I'm with you, man, Tommy or Jacob. I don't see how, you know, some of these defenses we play this year, we're going to put 45 points on.
Well, let's be fair. It was busted coverage. And a sweep play generated 14 of those points.
Yeah.
So is that, you know, repeatable? I kind of think it is, right? A mistake for the Chiefs turns into points far more often than other teams. They're just explosive. One other question for you, Dan. Maybe the biggest question coming into the offseason, left tackle. Yeah. What are you hearing on his performance from the cut? It's hard for us, I think, as fans to truly evaluate how an offensive lineman plays in a game. Like, we can see if they give up sacks, we can do that stuff. But in general, what was the return on the first performance for Kingsley Sumataya?
You know, I think they're still highly encouraged. I don't think he necessarily had, I mean, if you were going to grade the Ravens' performance in and of itself, I'd say it was average. It was a C at best. And there's definitely room for improvement because the one thing I thought learned from the first quarter to the fourth is the game is much quicker at this level than I think what he was prepared for. And you've got to be in physical shape and mental shape as well to play 60 minutes of football against a tough defense. That was a very, very physical defense. And so holding his own was, you know, at times a success, but he's got to be able to do that, just play in and play out. And I think it's always going to be, you know, when you look at him through the lens, you see Joe Tooney and you see Creed Humphrey and you see Trey Smith. Man, I don't want to say that's Mount Rushmore, but it's pretty close, right? And so you're looking at these guys and thinking, man, I've got to play at that level. Well, that's not going to come, certainly not in week one, and maybe not in his rookie year, to be honest with you. But I think they're definitely encouraged by how hard he's working and his ability to learn. There were things I was told that he did absolutely wrong in the first quarter that by the fourth quarter he was executing properly. So a guy's ability to learn that quickly, you're talking about in the span of, you know, 3 hour game, is encouraging. And so I think we're going to see good things out of him. And, but, you know, is he there yet? Well, not yet. But I want to see how the month of September goes with him.
Yeah, it'll be something to watch. Bengals game. It's that 3:25 national slot in the late afternoon on Sunday. Dan, we're excited about the call. You guys have the radio network tonight has your Chief Kingdom show. That's at 5 o'clock, just before the Royals tonight. So you can find that right here on KFH. We appreciate it, Dan.
Yeah,
I think we all like to lay the points here for the Chiefs against the Bengals. Get them while the getting's good. Dan, we appreciate it, and we'll talk again next week.
You bet, guys. Go Chiefs.
There goes Dan Israel. A lot of great stuff there. If you missed any of it, check it out on the Odyssey app. You can also go back and watch it again on the 12 News Connected app. You can go back to KFH Radio and watch it again, listen to it again. Great stuff, man. It's been a while with a full NFL weekend since we've come back to the Chiefs. So glad to get that all caught up and a look ahead there with Dan Israel. We're going to come back. We have plenty to talk about. We can begin to look ahead, I think, now for K-State KU football this week. We covered what they did in the past yesterday. Now moving forward, what do we need to see? We'll have that, maybe a look around the NFL as well. Maybe something on this Tyreek Hill story. I don't know what to make of that, but a lot to potentially get to on the show today. Your calls, the IHOP hotline is back open at 869-1240. IHOP bringing you its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal still through September 15th. Check that out. We'll be back. It's all Brockton Caster, more Sports Daily right after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. A couple of headlines, and I don't know if we'll have time to get into these today. Puka Nacua, who's been hurt for the Rams, at least 4 weeks on his injury. Tyreek Hill, the police have released the body cam footage of his incident before the game on Sunday. Certainly didn't impact his abilities on the field, but you can take a look at all of that. Kadarius Toney has signed. He's signing with the Browns. That's actually a pretty interesting fit. And Deshaun Watson is accused in a new sexual assault lawsuit. So those are some of the headlines out there today. I don't know if we'll have time to get into any of them today, because I do think it's with a Friday game, we need to start looking at KU and K-State football now, as the dust has settled on a week that I think, you know, both teams would probably tell you they were a little disappointed in their performances. Now, K-State ended up winning the game on the road in Tulane, so maybe they're not. But I think if we're being honest, the vibe of the, you know, two dozen or so K-State fans out at the fair yesterday was like, that wasn't very good. I would agree. KU did not, you know, win in a game that you felt the same way. I think going into this week, Tommy, I am pretty stunned that K-State is a 7-point favorite at home against Arizona. That seems too much for me. Get to them in a second. For KU, they're playing UNLV. UNLV has been off to I don't know if it's a surprising start for people that follow them, but it's a good start. A big win over Houston on the road included, and then they had a cupcake last week. But they come into Children's Mercy Park on Friday. Remember, both of these games are Friday this week. We'll have Shreya Slada tomorrow to help us, you know, look back and look ahead too. Kansas needs to beat the crap out of UNLV. I think, you know, like to get us back in the good vibes, I think they need to put it on UNLV in that game. I don't know if you agree with that. And that's without watching a second of UNLV football, but I don't really care, quite honestly. This needs to be a get right game for Kansas, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I think that you can go back and look at the Guaranteed Rate Bowl a year ago with the Jayhawks and UNLV. I mean, they faced off against each other in that bowl game back in December, and the Jayhawks put up 49 points. Of course, that was a different quarterback entirely Kansas. And, you know, so things have changed 9 months later. There's no doubt about that. But one thing that hasn't changed is that Barry Odom has done a nice job as the head coach at UNLV. You know, it looked like for Kansas, I mean, I remember that bowl game The Jayhawks jumped out to a really big lead, and UNLV never quit. Like, they battled back, and it became a 13-point win for the Jayhawks when it looked like, for a while, that it could end up being a whole lot more. So they're going to have a test against UNLV. They've got, I think, from an offensive point of view, the biggest priority for the Jayhawks this week has got to be, we need to unlock our offense, and we need to unlock it now. There's no more waiting. The time is up. The grace period is up. We have to unlock our offense and let them loose and figure out the best possible way to get points up on the board. That's going to be by running the football. It's going to be by Devin Neal. It's going to be by Daniel Hyshaw. It's going to be by Sevion Morrison. It's going to be running the football. That's the best opportunity that the Jayhawks have to put points on the board, because then it's going to take some of that pressure off of Jalen Daniels. They hopefully will soften up the defense a little bit to allow Jalen Daniels to have a little bit better of a chance to connect with his receivers.
It's fascinating because you said unlock, and my first reaction was like, no, because unlocking it is what they were trying to do with bombs. But then as you finish, I agree. Unlocking it might be running the ball 40 times. That may be the offense. And I think what we've seen through a couple of games now is that that can be the offense, right? The offense this year might be. It is, and I keep making it. It's like a role reversal for them in K-State. Kansas, to me, based on what we've seen, run the ball, play good defense, take care of the football. That will win them a lot of games this year. That may not be what we expected with Jalen Daniels back. That may not be what we anticipated, and it's very early in this season. But based on what we've seen, that very clearly seems to be the path to them to be the most effective they can be. Saying they need to beat UNLV badly, that's not an indictment on UNLV, by the way, for me. It's not at all. It is 100% if KU's going to make a run and consistently beat Big 12 teams, they're going to need to beat UNLV badly at home. They just are. And what does that look like? I think it looks a little different than maybe we thought it would, but they're significantly better defensively. They're good on the line. They have all the running backs we already knew about. Jalen Daniels doesn't look that good anyway. Flex on him by running the ball. Flex on him by controlling the clock. I'll tell you right now, the over-under on that game, Tommy, is 57.5. That under might be my favorite bet of the week.
It's only because their bowl game was a final score of 49-36 back in December. That's why.
But if you've watched a second of KU football this year, you know they're not a team that looks to be playing toward the over in games. Now, UNLV put 72 up on Utah Tech last week. The Houston score was 27-7. Houston just took Oklahoma to the brink. So, like, I would envision grind it out. Now, Kansas may put up some points here. I don't know about UNLV's run defense, but if it better had be on the ground. And that is not a protect Jalen Daniels. That is not anything other than the strength of Kansas, and we've only seen two games, one of them non-cupcake, is going to be controlling the clock, playing good defense, controlling the line of scrimmage, and utilizing your incredible backfield. Even with what we know Jalen Daniels has done in the past, that will be the best version of Kansas football this year. It's not what we expected, but it is not too early to totally change our expectations for this team. If they can do that, they're going to put themselves in a position to win every Big 12 game they play. That's how Kansas State has stayed so relevant over the years, right? They almost always play good defense. They almost always are good on the lines, and they run the ball effectively. That's what Kansas has. It's different than what we thought, but it's right there in front of us.
Yeah, it's not too early for them to lean back into what makes them dynamic, but it could be too late if they don't pull the trigger on it.
I agree.
This week. And I think that those are, it goes back to what I said, I think those are the main conversations in those, you know, coaching offices in Lawrence this week, is, you know, getting Lance Leipold and Jeff Grimes together. And, you know, there have been some growing pains offensively with the play calling. I am still not happy, and I don't think any Kansas fan, anybody that follows the team, would be happy with the play calling on Saturday, because, you know, I'm a full believer that the play calling cost the Jayhawks the game. Did Jalen Daniels look great? No, he didn't. But he was put in bad positions. Would he have looked better had the situations been better for him in play calling? Maybe somewhat, but there were some things that I think he was still shaking off the rust, and hopefully that rust continues to be shaken off this week for sure. I'm not ready yet, and I've seen chatter on social media. I'm not ready yet to say Jalen Daniels looks cooked, you know, or looks washed, or whatever phrase you want to use. I'm not ready to say that at this point. I just think that he looks rusty, and I think that he was put in some poor positions by the offensive coordinator there. So that's got to be the main topic of discussion for the Jayhawks. On top of that, and I say putting Jalen Daniels in better situations, I mentioned this yesterday, when Daniels is going to throw the football, which shouldn't be as many times as he did against you know, when they played last week against Illinois, they've got to make sure that they distribute out the ball to more than just the wideouts. They've got to find other weapons at tight end and running back for him to be able to get the football too. So those are all things I think that they need to be game planning for and getting ready for this weekend against when they're playing UNLV this weekend.
It is too early to say Jalen Daniels is cooked or washed, yeah, or whatever you want to say. Way too early. It is not too early to strongly consider that he will not be the quarterback he was the last time we saw him healthy when he was a Heisman candidate. You've got to prepare for that possibility, just like any team has to prepare, just like the Jets have to prepare for that possibility with Aaron Rodgers. Right. We haven't seen the guy play in a long time, right? So the good news with that is it doesn't mean that it's true. It means that it's okay if it's even partially true, because the strength of this team is going to be a little bit different than we thought it was. It's going to be things that don't, you know, Jalen Daniels is going to be a weapon to some capacity, and they need him to throw the ball. I'm telling you right now, unless UNLV and Kansas's first three offensive possessions just brick walls them on the defensive line and doesn't allow anything, I don't want to see Jalen Daniels throw the ball very much. I would almost rather reverse it, right? Maybe they build a big lead through the run and then they throw it just to try and shake some cobwebs off after things are safely within reach. But why would you even mess with it at this point? Kansas is going to be able to win Big 12 games if they control the lines of scrimmage and play good defense. It's the test and the history of football. That's always been true. And it appears to be their strength. So we'll see it against UNLV. K-State, on the other hand, Arizona. Honestly, Tommy, whatever it takes. I don't care what they do. I don't care what the outcome is. That's why I don't like the 7-point line. It's like a just win the game somehow kind of a thing for K-State. Now, remember, this one doesn't count to the Big 12 because this was scheduled before Arizona joined. So as we look at it, it's almost a resume game for K-State if they think they can be in the mix for an at-large. But I don't look at this where are you with 7 points? I that doesn't make a lot. I don't like it at all. It feels like K-State needs to win by 1 point.
I don't like it. I don't like it. I think that Arizona, at least offensively, has a little bit more firepower than Tulane did. And, you know, unless the Wildcats can adjust in their secondary, they did not have a good game defensively against Tulane, especially against the passing attack that the Green Wave had. Arizona's is better than Tulane's is. So they've got to fix that quickly. If number one, if they want to win the game. But again, if you're talking about the spread, I don't like that number either. I'm either going to stay away from it entirely, or I kind of like Arizona and I'll take the points.
Yeah, I mean,
that may change between now and Friday, but at least right now, that's what I like.
I think the line's going to move. I would be stunned if it's not down to like 5 by the time they play that game. I don't know if Arizona's better than Tulane offensively. Tulane was really good offensively, but they're almost certainly going to be better than Tulane defensively, just because it's more athletes, all the things of a Power 5 school, all of that. K-State won't be able to make the mistakes that they made against Tulane and survive this game. Avery Johnson got to be good right out of the gates, not just in the second half. That is a fascinating game. I just cannot believe it's a 7-point spread right now. I will be stunned. If you're going to bet K-State, do not bet that game until 1 second before kickoff, because I have to think that line's going to move to Arizona. Arizona wasn't overly impressive last week either, don't get me wrong, but we know their expectations coming into the year. They're expected to be a contender in the Big 12, and I think that they are. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll look at some of these uneasy headlines around the NFL here this morning. Al Brockton-Castor at Sports Daily. Don't go away. All right, welcome back here, Sports Daily. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday. Thanks to Mike Gillespie of Kings of Kauffman joining us to talk a little Royals. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, joining us to talk a little Chiefs. If you missed either of those, go back to the Odyssey app. Just a few minutes here, Tommy. Tyreek Hill, the body camera footage is released. Wild day. He was handcuffed, put on the ground. He makes it to the game, has a great game. We get the body cam footage. Tyreek Hill saying after he wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I would say a moderate tone of disrespect, certainly not anything to me that would warrant that sort of reaction. I don't know. I think this can easily be everybody overreacted a little bit kind of a situation. It's a difficult one though. It's a difficult one, and it's one where people can evaluate it. I think it's a hard job that, you know, law enforcement has, and sometimes extra patience is just a part of the job. This officer did not have that extra patience in that sense, but Tyreek Hill, you know, mouth off, fetch window, roll down your window when they tell you to roll down your window, all those things. It's unfortunate that it happened, and I'm glad that it didn't escalate to anything further.
Well, Tyreek Hill has done some terrible things in his life. This was not one of them. And, you know, the reaction, I don't think, was warranted.
Do we know how fast he was
by
driving?
Law enforcement, I don't know. But watching the body cam footage, you know, basically from start to finish yesterday, there was, in my mind, nothing that warranted Tyreek Hill from, number one, being pulled out of the car, number two, being on the ground, number three, right, being put in handcuffs. And then you've got Calais Campbell and Jonnu Smith, also whom are threatened with arrest. And, you know, there's aggressive law enforcement approaching them as well. And I understand, I've never been in the shoes of law enforcement, so I can't relate to that. You know, I don't understand the role in securing a scene and all the different, you know, threats that are, I've never been in that world before, so I can't relate to that. But what I do know is that it was disappointing, I think, the way that the whole thing went down. And I don't believe that Tyreek Hill especially deserved that kind of treatment.
I you know, it wasn't that long ago, and I don't recall where, a state trooper, I think it was in Colorado, was just gunned down for no reason. Like, it is a high tense, high emotional experience on both sides every time somebody's pulled over. You ever been pulled over, you know how nervous you are. I mean, we're two white guys. Like, we don't probably need to be as nervous, right? History tells us that.
Well, and so, like, one other thing that I'll say, there, I can think of one time specifically that I was having a bad day and I got pulled over for speeding. I was probably more disrespectful to the police officer than Tyreek Hill was. You know, I mouthed off a little bit. I felt like the police officer, you know, wanted to give me a lecture a little bit, and I was not in the mood for a lecture. And I told him, and I was like, give me the ticket and let me get on with my day. I mean, I was pretty rude to him. You know, that police officer had patience with me, and it didn't escalate to that.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I watched that body cam footage, and I'm like, man, what he said, what could his tone have been better? Sure. But it didn't warrant, you know, the reaction.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He was asked to do something that he didn't do in rolling down his window, which is the
he did.
Point
he, yeah, he was, and, but he did, and then but there was no time given. I feel like it was, you know, you need to roll down your window, or I'll pull you out of the car, and then you know what? I'm just going to pull you out of the car.
Yeah, I don't
just kind of switched pretty quickly.
I hate that these situations happen. I am very thankful that this one didn't escalate further than that. I have appreciated Tyreek Hill after the fact and going out of his way to talk about how much he says he wants to be a cop, and you know, he's showing respect in the aftermath. I would imagine that officer, and I don't know, we got to look at his history too. Like, what's his history? I'm just glad this didn't escalate any further than that. Strange day, didn't affect Tyreek Hill on the field. Real quick, Tommy, Deshaun Watson, another charge. He's not any good anymore at football. I don't know what's going to happen with all this with the Browns. Like, worst contract ever.
Yeah, this is going to go down in history as the worst contract in NFL history. There's no doubt about that.
It was the worst contract if he had no off-the-field issues, because he's not very good anymore. Now you add this on to it, another accuser, this time of assault, not just of, you know, the other lesser charges. This one's pretty serious. So, all right. Those are the other headlines. Didn't want to spend a whole lot of time with them, but they're out there if you want to look more into it. So we got them covered. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the networks today. Next on Sports Day.